Welcome to the Art of Mathematics. I'm Carol Jacoby, and joining us once again is Jeannie Lazzarini, who's going to talk to us about nature and mathematics. And by the way, she always comes with a lot of resources and pictures, and those are going to be up on the website, theartofmathematicspodcast.com. Welcome to the show, Jeannie.
Well, thank you very much, Carol. It's a pleasure to be back with you again. I'm really excited about my topic today, too.
A lot of nature seems to be based on mathematics and mathematical reasoning and so on. Are you familiar with that?
I'm very familiar with that, extremely. I garden a lot in the backyard, and I notice I'm always counting leaves, looking at flower petals and things like that. But, you know, I have this quote that I love by Jean-Jacques Rousseau, and it's, "Nature never deceives us. It's always we who deceive ourselves." And to me, patterns abound in nature. And by closely observing them, we can make mathematical models that can help us make predictions from those models. So imagine what it makes is pleasing to us. The symmetry of a flower petal arrangement, for instance, or flowing patterns in art and music, patterns in shells, crystals, plant growth, and other living organisms, including our own bodies. The Parthenon, the Mona Lisa, everywhere structure and order are comforting to the eye. There's a mathematical explanation for it as well. That's the beauty to me of mathematics. It describes real-world problems and patterns in terms of numbers that follow their own patterns. And this helps us to understand the world around us. And, you know, I've noticed a lot of patterns are called sequences, and they appear everywhere in our world over and over again. One of the most fascinating and famous mathematical series of numbers is what I call the fabulous Fibonacci number sequence.
Fibonacci? Oh,
yes. Have you heard of the famous Leaning Tower of Pisa?
Oh, yeah.
A man named Leonardo was born in the town of Pisa in 1175, the very same year that work began on the Great Tower. No one knew then that the tower would lean or that Leonardo would become a great mathematician. Back then, people did not have first and last names the same way they do now. To avoid confusion, people often introduced themselves by mentioning their hometown. In books, later, Leonardo sometimes was called Leonardo of Pisa. Do you know any other famous Leonardos of Italy?
Leonardo da Vinci.
Yes.
So he's Leonardo from...
Vinci, just outside of Florence. Yes, he was born in 1452. For a time, Leonardo of Pisa lived with his family in Algeria, northern Africa. His father, Bonacci, was a customs official there. Leonardo loved finding math in everything around him. While he was in Algeria, he learned to count by using the Hindu Arabic numerals, 0, 1, 2, 3, and so on that we use today, instead of using the Roman numerals that were used at that time in Italy.
They were still using Roman numerals then?
Yes. Yes, indeed.
How do you do arithmetic with Roman numerals? It's nuts. It's a terrible system.
Yeah, it takes some getting used to for sure. So he decided, Leonardo, to write some books on math and to teach people about these different useful numbers. Leonardo gave himself a new name as author of his books. Since he was the son of Bonacci, and the Latin word for son is filius, he gave himself the name Fibonacci. Before long, Fibonacci discovered a sequence of numbers that helps explain nature's math. Some people call this sequence the Fibonacci numbers. And again, like I said, I call them the fabulous Fibonaccis. It almost sounds like a circus act, doesn't it?
It does.
If you ever visit the Leaning Tower of Pisa, you can see a statue near it of the man who loved numbers, of Leonardo of Pisa. So here's how to imagine the numbers. The Fibonacci sequence follows the rule that each number is equal to the sum of the preceding two numbers. It begins with a 0, followed by a 1, and then you add the 0 and 1, and you get another 1. Then you add the 1 and the 1, you get a 2. Then you add the 2 and the 1, you get a 3, and so forth. you end up with this series that begins 0, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, 13, 21, and so forth. However, the Fibonacci numbers were actually first described in Indian mathematics as early as 200 BC in works by Pingala. And as I mentioned before, Fibonacci helped spread the Hindu Arabic numerals, and that was quite a big achievement at the time. Fibonacci first introduced the Fibonacci number sequence to European mathematics in his book written in 1202, Liber Baki, which popularized the Hindu-Arabic numerals in Europe. His book contained many interesting problems. One such problem speculated what would happen if a pair of rabbits were put into an enclosure to breed. In fact, Fibonacci made a huge point of this with a hypothetical situation. He stated, how many pairs of rabbits will there be after a year if it's assumed that every month each pair produced one new pair, which begins to bear young 2 months after its own birth? He assumed that each pair would produce another pair as soon as they matured at 1 month. Yikes. The problem is solved by picturing the following scenario. In the first month, a new pair of rabbits would be born. They would reach maturity in the second month and breed, producing a new pair in the third month. They breed again and produce a new pair in the fourth month, the pair in the fifth month, and so on. Meanwhile, rabbits born in the third month would reach maturity in the fourth month, and so in the fifth month, we would see two new pairs of bunnies produced, bring it to a total of five pairs. This is a nightmare. Now the rabbits born in the first, second, and fourth months would all be adding new pairs, bringing the 6 months total to eight pairs. In this sequence, you probably noticed something going on. Each number is the sum of the two numbers that preceded it, the Fibonacci sequence. Pretty soon, the rabbit breeder would be overwhelmed with rabbits. Mamma mia. Well, the sequence appears elsewhere too. It actually turns up in many places in our lives, as diverse as pine cones and poems, sunflowers and symphonies, art, modern computers, our bodies, I've mentioned a little bit of this before, and growth patterns, DNA, solar system, the stock market.
The stock market?
Yes. Well, think about piano keys in an octave. They're made up of Fibonacci numbers. You've got 8 white, 5 black, and 13 in all. Then an interesting thing about honeybees, they generally follow the pattern that eggs laid by unmated females are male, while eggs fertilized by a male bee are female. With this information, one can trace the pedigree of male bees. They have one parent, 2 grandparents, 3 great-grandparents, 5 great-great-grandparents, and so forth. So again, we have a Fibonacci sequence going on. Fibonacci numbers have been a source of insight into art, architecture, and as mentioned, nature and efficiency. It explains the growth structure of leaves and lungs, replicated in paintings and photographs, and I'll give you some examples later, and pops up as the basis for the pyramids, the Parthenon, and all other sources. So picture a growth of a new sprout coming out of the ground, okay? A small sprig coming up from the earth. As the plant grows upwards, the number of leaves per completed by the end of each turn around the stem will be a Fibonacci number. In other words, the leaves grow a little bit slightly askew to each other around the stem in a spiral so that each one of them gets more sunlight and rain, so they're not covered with each other until later. It's pretty interesting. Something else that's interesting about the sequence, if we take the ratio between two consecutive numbers, the first number divided into the next higher number in the Fibonacci sequence, it converges to 1.618030, and on and on and on. We call this phi, and it's also called the golden ratio, the golden mean, the golden cut, golden rectangle, the golden divine proportion, lots of names. Phi is considered the most beautiful number in the universe. I'll call it phi. That's the easiest. Euclid of Alexandria, around 1300 BC, in his Elements, gave the first clear definition of the golden ratio of phi. In other words, the golden ratio occurs when you divide a line segment into two smaller line segments of different lengths, for which the ratio of the whole line segment to the longer line segment is equal to the ratio of the longer line segment to the shorter segment. It was later named Phi after Greek sculptor Phidias, who sculpted the Parthenon. It is, as I mentioned, derived from the Fibonacci sequence. Okay, that's pretty interesting to me. Despite Phi looking like some clever math puzzle, it's truly a mind-boggling aspect of Phi that is a fundamental building block of nature.
So we see this both in nature and in man-made things, like the Parthenon is in those proportions.
Yes, looking at the columns and the sides and measuring the different proportions, you do see Phi comes up quite often.
It would be, it forms a rectangle in those proportions.
Right. Very interesting. Mm-hmm. So the ancients assumed the number Phi must have been preordained by the creator of the universe. So that's why early scientists called it the divine proportion. Well, here's another example. Let's buzz on back to the bees. The relationship between female and male bees in a honeybee community. Female bees always outnumber male bees. If you divide the number of female bees by the number of male bees in any beehive in the world, you will always get the number Phi.
That's weird.
Yes, it's amazing. And look at a nautilus shell. Can you guess the ratio of each spiral's diameter to the next?
Well, I can't, but I bet in the context, it's probably
Phi. You're right. A sunflower head has seeds that grow in opposing spirals. Guess what the ratio of each rotation's diameter to the next is?
Phi.
Pine cone spirals, leaf arrangements on a stalk, as I mentioned before, all follow the rule of Phi. Nobody understood the divine structure, though, of the human body better than Leonardo da Vinci. The reason I'm bringing this up has something to do with Phi. He actually exhumed corpses to measure the exact proportions of the human bone structure. He was the first to show the human body is literally made up of building blocks whose proportional ratios always equal Phi. I used to do this with my students in the classroom. So we would stand up and have tape measures. And I said, measure the distance from your shoulder to your fingertips. Then divide that distance from your elbow to your fingertips. What do you get? Something close to Phi.
Really?
Do the same from your hip to the floor divided by your knee to the floor. Or the tip of your head to the floor divided by the distance from your belly button to the floor. Curl your hand and measure from the first knuckle to the second knuckle and divide by the second knuckle to the third knuckle. Finger joints, toes, spinal divisions, on and on, Phi. You find it over and over. Pretty amazing.
Yeah, so we're all divinely proportioned.
Well, to a certain extent. We're not, you know, we're not perfectly formed like Vitruvian Man. You know. So artwork by Michelangelo, Albrecht Dürer, Da Vinci, and many others adhere to the divine proportion too, because it looks realistic. Even horizontal lines and paintings appear more pleasing along the divine proportion. Picture frames, door frames, window frames, credit cards, they look more proportioned. And if you measure the longer against the short, you will find it becomes Phi. Phi appears in the Greek Parthenon, like I said, the pyramids of Egypt, even the United Nations building in New York. It also appears in music and poetry. It's in the Organization of Harmonies and Mozart's Sonatas, the Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, and in other works. In the notes, do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. In the rhythm of a poem counted in verses known as metrical feet, diameter, trimeter, tetrameter, pentameter, octameter. Haiku is written with one of five syllables. Line two is written with lines 1, 2, and 5 of 8 words, and lines 3 and 4 of 5 words.
And those are all Fibonacci numbers.
You're looking at the Fibonacci numbers again. That's pretty interesting. I already mentioned the piano keyboard with the Fibonacci numbers. There's ratios of sounds and notes in Phi also. The number Phi was even used by Stradivarius to calculate the exact placement of the F holes in the construction of his famous violins. It's also called divine. Think of a five-pointed star. You just draw a star, you know, with 5 points. It's called a pentagram. Penta means five. Gram means drawing. The ancient called it a pentacle. The reason I'm bringing that up, the pentacle is considered both divine and magical in many cultures. Why? because the lines automatically divide themselves into segments according to feet. The ratios of the line segments all equal feet. For this reason, the pentacle is a symbol for beauty and perfection. So back to Fibonacci sequence, you might be asking, are there any practical applications of the Fibonacci sequence?
Yeah, I was wondering that.
Well, it turns out, yes, there are. If you've ever traveled through Europe and you're trying to figure out, okay, how many miles in a kilometer, you know. Anyway, if you ever want to convert from miles to kilometers, an easy way is to pick a number in the Fibonacci sequence, then look at the next number. It'll be a closer approximation for the conversion. For example, 5 kilometers is about 3 miles. 8 kilometers is about 5 miles. This works all the way up the sequence. It is easier than multiplying by the conversion rate, which is about 1.609 kilometers per mile. Do you notice something about that number?
Yeah, it is. B.
Here we go.
You talked about how there are the Fibonacci numbers everywhere, and you're talking about being out in your garden and seeing it. Can you give us some more examples of that?
Sure. The spirals of Fibonacci sequence appear on florets on a cauliflower, on broccoli, fruitlets on a pineapple, seeds on a sunflower. They all spiral outwards.
So if I took a sunflower and counted the number of spirals or...
From the center out, the number of seeds, the number of spirals, yeah, you would find that that would be a Fibonacci number, yes. And each of these spirals contains a number of seeds, florets, bumps, leaves, or tubular cores that are equal to the Fibonacci number. Flowers mature seeds in a circular pattern, setting the growing seeds at an angle to each other and letting them expand outwards. It turns out the best number of seeds to deposit per turn is around 1.618. Again, it's tied to the golden ratio as well. Since flowers can only make whole numbers of seeds, this means no seed is lodged directly under its predecessor. Instead, the seeds spiral outward from the center. Do you want to know some other Fibonacci factoids?
Sure.
Well, November 23rd is now officially called Fibonacci Day because
11/23.
There you go. So remember that.
Another mathematical holiday we get to celebrate, not just Pi Day.
Just before Thanksgiving Day. Okay, and then there's also Fibonacci and Pascal's triangle. The Fibonacci numbers can be found in Pascal's triangle, and the triangle was developed, of course, by French mathematician Blaise Pascal. Pascal's triangle is the triangular array of numbers that begins with one up the top and with ones running down the two sides of the triangle. Each new number lies between two numbers and below them, and its value is the sum of the two numbers above. So the Fibonacci sequence is related to Pascal's triangle in that the sum of the diagonals of Pascal's triangle are equal to the corresponding Fibonacci sequence term. So if you draw the diagonals across, you'll see that. And one other interesting factoid is the sum of any 10 consecutive numbers in the Fibonacci series is always divisible by 11. Another factoid, the square of a Fibonacci number minus the square of the Fibonacci number two terms before it is another Fibonacci number.
Wait, the squares? The difference between the squares?
The square of a Fibonacci number minus the square of a Fibonacci number two terms before it.
Okay. That's unexpected.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. So there's all factoids like that. But again, remember, nature never deceives us. To me, maybe nature understands math more than we do. But mathematics can certainly help us explore and better understand the natural order of beauty around us. And I find it fascinating to see fascinating Fibonaccis, fabulous Fibonaccis, and how they relate to nature and our world. And to a lot of the art, a lot of artists, like I mentioned, had used it in their art. And it's in music. It's all around us. It seems pretty amazing that that's the case. So that's my take on the fabulous Fibonaccis.
That's great. Very interesting. Learned a lot I didn't know before. That's good.
Thank you
so much, Jeannie. I really appreciate it. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me again. It was my pleasure. I really enjoyed it, too. Have a great day.
We'd love to hear from you. If you have something you'd like to share on the air or a suggestion for a guest for a future show, leave a message at anchor.fm/theartofmathematics with hyphens, or email me at cjacoby@jacobyconsulting.com. And if you'd like to learn how to get answers from data, check out my class at excelfordecisionmakers.com. See you next month. Thanks for listening.